You're listening to Cattails.
Hi, you're listening to Cattails and I'm Cat. Charlie Harper is an absolute one-off. Back in the 70s, this former hairdresser took the UK subs from London's punk clubs to Top of the Pops. And whilst other punk veterans have become idols, Charlie has become an icon. Now over 70, he's still performing with the band, still throwing himself around the stage, and still entertaining audiences who refuse to grow old. But when he's not on the road touring, he's writing his autobiography and has a penchant for painting cats. This is the one with Charlie Harper.
Thank you for agreeing to talk to me. It's an absolute pleasure to be able to give you a call, actually. And shall I tell you what turned up in the post this morning? You know what it's going to be. That cat. It's absolutely beautiful. My painting is wonderful. Thank you. It's just gorgeous. Thank you so much for doing it. I mean, how did you get into doing all those? I've been fascinated to see that you've been doing these for quite some time.
Yeah. Well, I used to paint like sea views and stuff. Like I used to paint, you know, this captain and his dog by his boat, and you know, with a kind of a rocks and lighthouse in the background and stuff like that. All kind, because we moved down to the sea. And then I don't know, one year I just done a couple of scruffy little cats, kind of punky kind of cats, and they were bought up straight away, and everyone said, oh, can you do some more cats? And I became a cat painter.
You'd never have guessed it.
It was just as simple as that.
Wow. They're taking on a life of their own, aren't they? They got so much popularity. Everybody's buying up your cat paintings.
Yeah. I've got them stacked up. Yeah. Luckily, one used to take me a couple of weeks, but now I've got it down. I've done a couple in a day, you know. It's acrylic paint and it dries quickly. You know, within about 10 minutes it will dry and you can get up and do the next bit. So it's quite handy. And, you know, sometimes when I've got time, yeah, I've done a couple in a day before.
Blimey, that's going.
Yeah,
do you know, but I suppose you go into the, as any artist or creative, you get into a flow, don't you? And that's the way it turns out. It is what it is in a way, isn't it? Because it's
hot. Yeah. The great thing about painting is, you kind of learn as you go along, you know. There's just little things that teach you how to do it a little bit better. You know, for instance, you know, I used to kind of almost paint as many hairs as a cat has, and it took me forever.
Yeah.
And I just kind of found out that I've got these kind of old brushes, which are kind of, you know, normally an artist would throw them away because all the kind of hairs are spread out. But they're just amazing for doing cat fur. So it takes me minutes where it took me hours before.
Oh, that's brilliant.
But these are old brushes, old, you know, dead brushes.
Well, it's all techniques, isn't it, that you learn and you can actually paint with anything, you know. It could be your hands, couldn't it, if you get the results you want.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you do the more you do it, the more you learn, you know, you never stop learning, really.
Oh, well, I'm so grateful that you've done that for me. It's absolutely wonderful.
You know, it was 2 weeks or more before I thought of an idea. You know, it was really hard to try and find a simple idea. You know, because I was thinking design, but then I thought, oh, she's already got design, so let's just do a kind of, you know, one of my paintings. Suddenly, I thought of cat tales, you know, reading the book, you know, tales in a book. And I kind of finished it in, you know, a day or two. As soon as that idea came to me, and then I thought of, you know, the kind of that book title as well. You know, I get inspired, I can splash it on the canvas in a day or two. And that book which he's reading, what's it called?
The Fable of the Bees.
Yeah, have you ever read that?
I haven't, but you know, I saw what you'd done and I looked it up and I thought, this is really interesting about society. And it reminded me of Animal Farm, the concept of looking at people and how it all works.
Yeah, it's almost the opposite kind of thing of Animal Farm, but it's, you know, it's really valid and it really helps you in your life, the way you think about things, you know. So, it's helped me. And when, you know, say in the band, you know, band say, oh, you know, like, this is going all wrong. And I kind of explained to them something out of the Fable of the Bees, which is, it's quite useful.
Oh, I'm going to have to read it. Yeah, it's a bit sort of like going against the grain, isn't it? It has that sort of punk element to it, I suppose, doesn't it, rather than just doing what's conforming.
Yeah, well, it's got, like, things, what, you know, about, like, thieves and violence and stuff in society, which we hate, but it kind of explains that really we can't, we need that, we can't do without it.
Amazing.
You know, it's weird, yeah, but it's, it kind of, you think, wow, yeah, that, it makes sense.
Wow. I've got to have to pick it up now and read it, aren't I, Charlie?
Yeah, you should. It's one book everyone should read, really.
Well, a little bird's also told me that you actually are keeping bees. Is that right? Or you're thinking about it?
No, I've built a beehive. It's just for, you know, I've kind of bit of a hobby carpentry and, bit of spare wood around. And I built this beehive and now it's at the bottom of the garden, facing the right way, I think. And just hoping bees will come into it. You know, I'm not going to kind of buy a queen or anything like that. And just, it's kind of, it's a very traditional kind of beehive. So it looks nice. It's like a little house.
Oh.
And it's down the bottom of the garden. If bees want to go in there, they go in there. And it's completely sealed up. You can't go and get the honey for the bees.
Oh, wow. Now, that's unusual, isn't it? Because most beekeepers, you know, do it for the honey, don't they? But, you know, you're looking at it from the conservation point of view, are you?
Yeah. Well, one, I'm diabetic, so I can't eat a lot of honey.
Oh, good boy.
and you know, we have it and we, you know, like honey and mustard salad dressing and stuff like that. It's okay. But, I can't eat a lot of honey. But, it's a decorative thing. My wife's kind of worried, you know, when she goes down back, I go, watch out for the bees. There's none there. So, but it's like our little, you know, those little bird boxes. We put one by the house and a family wren's nested in it and brought up babies this year. Yeah, little wrens. But it was up there about 3 years before that happened. So,
they sort of like, they watch, don't they, for a while and then eventually they get the confidence to go and use it.
Yeah. And I think because there's kind of cats around here. Both our neighbours had cats and one still has them, although, well, someone's got a pigeon down the bottom of our garden. They must have kind of been hiding under the bushes and waiting for a pigeon to come along and, you know, the little bird feeders on a pole?
Yeah.
And, you know, they drop stuff off on the bottom. So they must have been feeding the bottom and the cats jumped the pigeon.
Oh.
That's one less pigeon. But we try and put them up where the cats can't get at them.
Yeah. Well, funny enough, I've got a satellite dish on the side of the house. Don't have satellite, actually, but it's sitting there. I have never taken it down. It's just got the dish. And I don't know, it was last year, these little birds had started to try and make a nest on it, and it was collared doves. And then in the end, they've had about 3 or 4 different broods, and they've come back again this year. So it's amazing.
Great.
Oh, well, it sounds like you're really enjoying nature and enjoying that creativity and downtime.
Well, you know, I've been kind of, you know, on the road all my life, and, you know, we've got this lovely little, it's a bungalow, but we've built into the roof and made a big bedroom and an ensuite up there, and you know, we just put all the money into the house, and you know, no time to enjoy it. And because of lockdown, you know, I've really I've been getting on my painting, and also I'm writing a book, so it's really helped with that. So I'm really digging being at home.
Wow, it's
Yuko's
funny.
Getting a bit stir crazy.
I wish she bless her.
Well, we've been going out now. Like yesterday, we went to see some friends who were in lockdown. They just come back from France, so they had to be in lockdown and for a couple of weeks. So we just saw the friend. You know, we've been seeing a few friends, not far away, just a few miles. I've been in the supermarket a couple of times. Because doctor said I'm really very high risk of catching it. If I catch the thing, I haven't got much of a chance. So I've been really, really careful.
Yeah,
I mean, luckily we've got a farm shop in the middle of the fields, sells almost everything. And, you know, so I don't mind going there.
Yeah. Well, this is what you've got to do. You've got to look after yourself, haven't you? I mean, am I right in saying that you've had a couple of heart attacks, haven't you, in the past? So I suppose you must be very aware of it.
Yeah. not because of that. No, it's my diabetes that they said it's the danger.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing, isn't it? You've got to...
being old. You know, so a few things.
It all adds up, doesn't it? So,
I'm not talking, you know, like Yuko told me today, asked me today if I was nervous going to see Tony. But that wasn't, you know, if I was nervous at all, there was, they live on a beautiful place. It's like on the... And not docks, Sovereign Harbour in Eastbourne.
Wow.
All the boats are there. And of course, you know, we're all like hanging around for the bridge to close so we can get to the other side. You know, just the streams of boats are coming along. We must have been waiting there for about 20 minutes because bank holiday, everyone's coming back, you know. So, and then, you know, the bridge closed and then crowds of people were coming back our side. And so we waited for, you know, the crowd to, and also, you know, being bank holiday, when we were going there, you know, there was crowds of people walking around with no masks, and I felt a little bit edgy then.
I know, there's so many people who are not observing the sort of guidelines, aren't
there? Yeah, yeah. But this end, you know, there's not much of it, luckily, you know. I think that's why. But I live in a little town called Seaford, and, you know, you go out and around Seaford, and most people are wearing masks, because... Yeah. Yeah, they're out shopping, you know, they've got to go in and out of the shops. So, but luckily, there's nothing much here.
Well, that's good, really, isn't it? How are you going to handle going back on the road then when it all opens up? I know you've got some gigs now sort of coming through, haven't you?
Well, we've kind of said it's clubs at closing, you know, and, you know, they can't make any money, really, because, you know, allowing 8 people in or something when you've got... So you've got a club at 200, they'll have about 20 people in, I think.
Yeah.
But, so we've postponed everything to our next winter tour next year in January. Just hoping that'll be okay.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Well, surely it's got to be sorted somehow by then, hasn't it? Well, you know, we'll all have to adapt.
I hope so. But you'd be surprised at the people who just don't care. You know, it's like walking across... the bridge, there's crowds of people all very close together, no one wearing masks.
No.
You know, it's easy done.
Yeah.
So, and the school's coming back, that's going to be another bump, you know.
Yeah, and winter, of course, they're saying as well, aren't they? So, yeah, you've got to be careful. But, yeah. So, anyway, tell me about the subs. Come on then, Charlie. You've been the constant in this band. It's your band, really, isn't it? And, of course, you've had lots of people passed through the band, really. All these musicians have come and gone. How have you coped with the changing lineup over the years?
Well, I learned to live with it. I mean, even before Nicky, there was about 3 lineups. You know, before like Peter, Paul, Nicky, and myself, which were everyone knows as the original band. But there were a couple of lineups before that, really. So, you know, lineups kind of go. I used to kind of go with, say, we got a new guitarist, go with him. Like Captain Scarlet, for instance, after Nicky, was a big, big sea change. You know, he loved John McGeoch and Susie and the Banshees and bands like that with loads of echo and reverb and everything. And I did too. So there was a big change then. And then after that, a lineup came along which went right back to the roots. And there was a drummer who made everyone, you know, do everything properly. But it was a much stronger band. You know, we played much harder. So there was a change there. And then after that, I found like the change is kind of interesting and just went with the flow. You know, it's like joining another band almost.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's like it's morphing, isn't it, over the years from one thing to another.
Yeah, kept you from getting bored.
That's a good point, actually, isn't it? Because if you're just churning out the same old stuff, which a lot of bands kind of fall into that trap, don't they? It can become a bit stale if you're not careful.
Yeah.
So new people make it a bit fresh, don't they? Yeah, good plan, even if you didn't intend it.
You know, we're a band, been a bit big failure, really, because sometimes I've gone, well, come on, let's try and grab that first fine, careless rapture of our early days. And then we go and try that, and then the album comes out, and all the critics say, oh, the subs have come out with a fresh new sound. So, You know, we've been failing all along, you know.
Going round in
circles.
In a
good way, but yeah, still failing.
No, it sounds great. I mean, talking of your albums, you've done a lot of albums, and you've obviously gone from A to Z, which you've now completed. Was that an intention at the time, or did you just think, wow?
Well, it was an intention at the time to just, we thought, we may do four albums, A, B, C, D, but if we go on, it's just that my memory's not that good, and, you know, someone say, what was the M album? And Mad Cow Fever. So it's easy to remember the album, otherwise I'll never remember anything.
That's a good plan. I like that idea, though. Yeah. That's really good. You can't go wrong, can you? And you know where you are in the sequence as well.
Yeah. And it's helping my book, you know, so I'm writing a book. Although we've got the time and matter thing, so it's, you know, everything's on there.
Yeah. Yes, of course, you're the fan side, as it were, isn't it? It's your documented history in a way, isn't it? So tell me about this book, then. This sounds exciting. Is this going to be like an autobiographical book?
No, it's autobiography, from, day I was born, so now. And, I've done a kind of thing on lockdown as well. Ends up with a lockdown thing.
Oh, right, okay.
So, and I count on the pages now, and I've got kind of, I'm into, like, over 200, I think.
Crikey, that's amazing.
That might be 250, you know. I'm going for... I can't remember who is, but one of my favourite books had 325 pages, so I'm going for that.
Oh, well, you're almost there then, aren't you? Let's be honest.
Yeah.
You're doing well. How's it been trying to recall all those memories? I mean, you're saying there about not having a great memory, so how have you managed to do it?
Well, yeah, it's really weird, actually, because, if I go through a whole tour... sometimes I I'm out of my head drunk and I'm remembering a lot of it, you know, and all the good stuff, who played and who was there and everything. And then the next day, when I don't know, I may have been worse, I don't know, but I didn't remember a thing. And it does help when you've played a gig before, so you're familiar with the gig. The ones where I know I was carried into the van and I just was unconscious for the whole next day almost.
Oh,
and but it was Coney Island High in New York in the village, and I thought, it's such a great place. So I did, and people came from England to see us as well. So it was a real, real party night. And I think the first night we played with Sick on a Bus, which are great mates of mine, drinking buddies.
And
the next night was Casualties, who I also knew when they came to London. So it was party night, two nights.
Blimey.
Yeah, but I remember most of it. So maybe I was too fatigued, you know, like tired, and because they were very, very tiring tours. I mean, you get out of a club, get into the van and start driving to the next venue, you know, like after two days, you know.
Yes.
So you had to keep, you know, like just drive on through the night.
Right, that's quite grueling, isn't it? But, I mean, it's interesting that you say that, you know, you had a few beers, should we say, before you went on stage. Did you need that to go on stage? You know, some people are a bit frightened of the audience at that stage.
Yeah,
quite a bit.
I never like going on stage. it used to be a saying, I can't remember what it was now, but just to take the edges off kind of thing.
Yes.
A couple of pints before you go on, it loosens you up, you know, then you can just concentrate on what you're doing and not at other things, you know, kind of... if you're sober, you know, like you're aware of too much.
Yeah, yeah, it's enough to help you on your way, but not too much to impair your performance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nice one. So, have you got a particular track that you'd like me to play?
If you can find a track called Solutions, because it's very apt for today. It's a kind of reggae song about the leaders are meant to lead, but they drag their feet and all kinds of stuff like that. And it's very apt about leaders today. And it's one of the best songs I've ever written.
Oh, terrific. That's the one to go for.
Everybody knows
Hello, I'm Charlie Harper, and you are listening to Cat Tales.
What about those early years, then? Were they really as mad as you'd expect in the punk scene?
Well, the early years lasted for 40 years. you know, it's mad all the way through, really. And that's why, you know, I kind of, you know, stopping it, and I'm not missing it. And I'm, you know, I find writing it in my book takes you back, and you're kind of living it again. Yeah. So through all this, I've been on tour.
Yeah.
You know, for the past 6 months. I've been on tour in my book, in my head. So that's why I haven't missed it at all.
Yeah, well, actually, that might be the best way of reliving it, isn't it? Without the worries, yeah. without the stress, yeah. and without the dangers as well.
yeah.
So looking back on that, though, was there a particular highlight for you? I mean, I've got to suggest one for you. It's got to be the Sooty and Sweep show, I would have said. But
did you ever seen it?
No.
It's on YouTube.
Is it? Oh, I've got to look this up.
it's just Sooty and Sweep, you know, jumping up and down on their bed, and we're playing one of our... Something like Disease or something, you know, one of the fast ones, and Pete, whatever his name is, comes in and stop that, and turns the record off and turns on the light. When he leaves, you know, they put it back on again, so Pogo in on their beds again. So, it's quite funny.
Well, once you've made it to the Sooty and Sweep show, come on, you're there, aren't you, really?
Well, that's when our management, had an office in Fleet Street, and because... They'd be in the pub with all the kind of writers and everything, you know, and how's your band getting on? And I don't know whether he told them, stick them in one of your cartoons, and there'd be a cartoon, one of the famous cartoons, saying a standard or something.
Yeah.
And and there'd be a poster of the Subs on the wall, you know, in the cartoon, and there's all little things like that going on, and... you know, so all these little things really helps us.
Yeah, and it marks your place in history, doesn't it, in music history. And that's what's lovely, isn't it? Looking back, you think, crikey, we've done this, that, the other, and actually you've been recognised for it.
Yeah, I suppose so. You know, we've had our little niche in rock and roll history. We don't have to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or anything like that. In fact, that would be an insult.
Well, it's kind of against the grain in a way, isn't it? Something like that.
So I found out, you know, we did the research and everything. We even had an article in the Rolling Stone, I think it was.
Oh, blimey.
And I thought, you know, that's a bit of an insult.
Is it too mainstream for you? It's not really rebellious enough.
Those hippies know about punk rock.
Yeah, so, I mean, that sort of, like, punk rebellion, was that always with you from an early age then, or is it something that you just saw the movement happening?
I remember being at school, and the headmaster kind of called me out and said something about, I'm too rebellious or something, you know. And I think I was 11 years old.
Oh, God. Oh, dear.
Put me in my place.
You started young then, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, it was good. It was then that rock and roll hit.
Yeah.
And it kind of changed. I mean, there was a kind of complete world change. To me anyway. You know, we started dressing. We didn't want to wear school uniforms. We just, you know, tore them up and... you know, wouldn't wear them, and although we couldn't wear our extreme rock and roll clothes, because you remember drain pipes, and I don't know if you remember, we used to wear fluorescent socks.
Yes.
You know, and stuff like that, and instead of wearing them baggy old 40s jeans like cowboys, you know, the jeans were really tight, and brothel creepers, stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a complete change. And, you know, like, there was a handful of us who went to school like that.
God, that must have been... No wonder you were sort of, like, pulled to the front.
trying to grow sideboards. And then a new teacher came along, and he had sideboards. And, it's got sideboards. We're trying to grow our sideboards. Shaving the bum fluff on the side of our faces.
Trying to make it thicker. That's wonderful, isn't it? But, you know, the whole sort of punk thing was also about the fashions, wasn't it, as well? So you can see why the music and the fashion go together, because it is about that rebellious all-in-one thing.
Well, when punk came along, it was the whole thing. It was like writing, art, dress, as well as music. It was a whole bag, you know, it was a whole sea change. So it was much more interesting, yeah.
Well, interestingly, about the hair, you know, I was just thinking hair being part of it. You were a hairdresser, I understand, as well.
Yeah, I used to do lots of that leopard print stuff.
Did you? I was going to say, did you do Mohicans?
I mean, even early on when, you know, I was so young, there was, do you remember Eunice Stubbs?
Yes, I do.
Well, she was on a Dairy Box chocolate advert, right? Mm-hmm. And this was before your time. This might have been in the late 50s or early 60s, really early 60s.
Right.
How old was I when I went to work? 1960. I started work at 15, so it must have been 1959.
Wow.
So, and I didn't cut hair then. I wasn't that good. I was just an apprentice. So it must have been the early 60s when she was on TV, black and white TV, with this Dairy Box, and she had this short little cute haircut.
All right.
One of my really first jobs was a barber, and they taught me how to, you know, like cut men's hair, mm-hmm. you know, like, so that short haircuts. So when that came along, I was the only one who could do that Dairy Box chop. Well, that's what it was called.
Oh,
haircut. So, you know, she's got a really cute face, yeah. Isn't she? She looked amazing when she was young.
Yeah.
So, that was a big craze. And, you know, I kind of, I was the only one who could do that in the shop. So, I got busy very quickly.
Oh, blimey.
And then, you know, when I had my own shop, it was kind of more or less not a punk rock shop, but a rock kind of hairdressing shop. You know, we were doing, women were coming in and asking for Keith Richard haircuts and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was doing this leopard print and basically, what's the fast one? Cheetah prints and stuff like that.
Incredible.
And then we went on the road in Scotland, the Roxy tour, and I just gave the shop over to the other stylist, my assistant. It was my shop, and I just said, "Well, you carry on."
Oh wow! And that was the end of the hairdressing career then. And
just like that, you know. It was like, yeah, you're at your crossroads, you know. And,
yeah.
You go and sell your soul to the devil. And I did.
But you've never looked back, have you?
No. But that's what I tell people, yeah, do it, you know, yeah. Go for it. Because it's amazing life being a, you know, being a musician, being able to play music and making a living from it is something a little bit precious, I think.
You're so right. I mean, lots of people try to, don't they? But it's such a difficult industry to make
money
from.
A lot of people... have their priorities wrong. You know, you've got to love it and do it for the love. You don't, a lot of people just do it, go for the money, and it doesn't work that way, you know.
Yeah.
It is an art form.
Yes.
Know?
Yeah.
Even pop stuff where they rely on, you know, great producers to make them sound great and arrange the music. You know, there is a very big art form in even that. You know, you've got to kind of love the music, learn about the music first.
Yeah, sure. Otherwise, you've got no real product, have you?
Yeah.
Got to have the quality.
It does help to have a bit of talent, which I haven't got much of. But my talent doesn't lie in my talent lies in arranging. I kind of got a little talent for arranging music.
Right.
You know, going through rock and roll and R&B and blues and everything. You know, I kind of got an ear for how to start a song and how to finish a song and bits in between, bridges and stuff, which a lot of punk doesn't use, but, you know, I like using stuff like that.
Mm.
Even if the bridge is just a gap, quiet bit, you know, then it comes back, and when you play it live like that, you know, the crowd goes mental when it comes back into the song, you know, so you've got to kind of visualise you're doing it live.
Yeah, I guess that's the difference, isn't it, really, between a recording and a live performance, is you have a different interaction with the audience, don't you?
Yeah, and then there's the single, the album track, and the B-side and A-side, and there's all these kind of live, you know, there's all the, you know, you've got to recognise what goes where.
Mm.
You know, guitarists come to me and they can go, right, this is a verse and this is a chorus, and I've gone, no, the chorus should be the verse. And I can see things like that immediately, you know. So,
wow.
But I'm a crap singer, but I just like singing, you know.
Oh, Charlie, no, you may say that, but I couldn't possibly comment. That's amazing what you're saying there about that construction of the songs, you know. So when you're actually putting them together, I mean, obviously there's an input from other people as well by the sound of it to try and come up with the finished product. But do you think of actually, okay, what we're going to do is a number of different versions of this, and you're thinking of that as it's being written?
We used to in the early days, like say we'd done a single of Stranglehold, and it was too fast. And I said, look, let's do it right on the album. And we've done it a bit slower and a bit more kind of heavier on the album. You know, things like we had more time, but now there's less and less time. And we're writing an album right now. And say the guitarist sent me his three songs. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, the first one's pretty good. We could work on that. The last one's okay, but I didn't like the middle one, and I'm going to go and say to him, well, look, forget about that song. Look, do something that highlights you on guitar. You know, I want it guitar heavy, you know, not just a wordy song. And then again, they expect me to sing them, and, you know, they've got to write a song for me if they expect me to sing them.
Yeah.
You know, they're not my kind of song, so... You know, it doesn't matter. It's a UK subs, you know, thing. Alvin always sings a couple of songs on an album.
Yeah.
So, you know, at this time, I don't think it really matters.
And what you've got there is a bit of a challenge, haven't you? Because you've got Alvin in France, haven't you? You know, you're over here. You've got Steve up north. It's a bit of a, oh, crikey, how do we put it all together? You know,
Alvin thinks a lot like me, and he writes really clever songs. You know, there'd be a song which... this is kind of for you. You know, he's actually said, oh, this is a Charlie kind of song. You know, he will sing it. And it will be wet, but, you know, the drummer and they've got their own kind of styles, and it's not my style.
Uh-huh.
So they've got to have to learn to sing them themselves. You know?
Yeah, it's got to be a UK sub sound, hasn't it? Otherwise, it's not going to be you able to do it and do your stuff. Yeah.
Might as well, like, just do it myself, because I write a song almost every day, and I could write the whole album myself if I wanted to. So, got to back up.
Yeah. Well, at least you've got an idea of what you want, and you're really clear about that. And that's, you know, that's important as a leader of the band.
It should be a really good album. You know, I mean, it's easy. We've just got to write three songs each, and we've taken like a year to do it. Should be all right.
And when is this looking at coming out then? Is this going to be a end of the year thing or next year?
I'm not sure. We're kind of on the verge of booking a studio. So we're actually recording it this year. And so it may be out by the end of the year. I'm not sure.
But it's coming soon.
Yeah. I mean, it could be out this year.
And are you going to start the alphabet again?
No. It's only got a title. I've given it away, so, you know, they're saying, oh, we'll keep the title secret, but I don't see why, you know. Let's advertise it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's called, I forget what it's called now, anyway. Reverse engineering.
Reverse engineering, love it. That's nice. So where did that come from? That's an interesting one.
Well, Alvin thought of that. Immediately I thought of, like, UFOs crashing in the desert and the Americans, you know, like, getting all these ideas. Like, they reckon that, you know, cell phones and all things, that come from reverse engineering from UFOs, you know, technology.
Mm, brilliant. I love that concept as well, actually, because it's probably very true, isn't it? Who knows?
Well, yeah, they're getting more and more evidence of this, you know. I'm a sucker for watching all these kind of things on TV. For instance, in a movie, you'll see a castle, and it'll still be all these rough stones. But in the 14th or 12th century, when they built these castles, you know, they had beautiful tapestries on the wall. It wasn't just stone, bare, cold stone. They had these huge fires. Now, I've kind of not lived in the castle, but I've stayed in the castle over a couple of days, I suppose. And the fire is so warm, it's unbelievable, you know.
Yeah, they're really thermal, aren't they?
Well, it's a big, you know, it was in a kind of almost not quite a bank, a small banqueting hall, I suppose. Probably, you know, room for 100 people or, 200 people. It warmed, this big fire, you know, it's huge. It just warmed the whole place up, you know, and this was in winter.
Lovely.
So, you know, people are kind of... They're just underestimating what these ancient people were capable of.
Yeah.
You know, they're saying things like, oh, you know, that the pyramids must have had help from aliens or these old architectural things. And they just underestimate what ancient people were capable of. Their brains wasn't that far from ours. You know, there were some very, very clever people around then.
Yeah, and they applied it differently, didn't they, to what we do now? But people think...
Well, they didn't have that distraction that we have now.
Yeah, that is a good point, really, isn't it? Yeah. Like, the internet has a lot to answer for, doesn't it?
Although it does help a lot, I must say. Yeah. So, you know, yin and yang, you know,
it
throughout
is.
Everything is all yin and yang, bad and good.
Oh, it's a strange world, isn't it? Oh, well, thank you so much for your time, Charlie, and thank you so much for the cat. I absolutely adore it, and you're an absolute star.
No, and thank you, Kat.
We'll do it again sometime, Charlie, when your book's out.
Okay, yeah, love to, Kat.
All right. You've been listening to Cat Tales. To listen again to this and other tales, go to cattales.co.uk.